favor a proposal on the concept.
Okay, and
it was simulation based.
This is our first speaker, Dr. Ken Palmer. He has been a system engineer for what, 20, more than 20 years?
Yeah.
And he's a very interesting individual. He has a PhD in sociology from the London School of Economics. And he's still working on another PhD.
That's right.
In Australia?
Yeah.
How do we go all the way to Australia?
Well, you don't have to go all the way there. You can do it by distance.
Okay. Don't you have to show up once in a while?
No. Don't have to show up at all.
Okay. All right. Okay. He'll give us a talk on schema theory, right?
General schema theory, yeah.
Okay. All right.
How do you...
How do you move things around?
Yeah.
Just tap it. All right.
Okay. I want to go forward into the presentation.
Okay. Yeah. Ken has a lot of charts, but I don't think you will cover all of them.
No.
Yeah, so
starting.
So you have half an hour.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to go pretty fast here. The good thing about this talk is that I've already given it at the CSER conference, which was at Stevens in April. And so if I foul this up, you can listen to the one on the internet and hear a better version of it. So this is the, what happened was that I was invited to give a talk on the mathematical and philosophical foundations of systems engineering to CSER 2004. And I created a presentation that was too big. And so I gave the second half of it to the CSER 2005. So I'm going to give you the same presentation I gave there. And this presentation, the first half of the presentation, which is also on the internet, you can listen to it if you want, was about systems engineering and the concept of emergence, and how the structure of emergence and the structure of systems engineering has the same structure from an ontological point of view. And so the main point of that first part was that the whole discipline of systems engineering is structured by the meta-levels of emergence, and that systems engineering is intrinsically emergence engineering. But systems engineering is not enough. We need this. We need a new kind of higher level meta-discipline called emergence engineering. This talk is about how beyond emergence engineering, we need something even beyond that, which I'm calling schemas engineering, based on schemas theory, which is the basic thing that I'm doing my research in for my PhD. Okay, so the whole point of this research is that what happened is that we're all systems engineers, right? And if it was a perfect world, we would all know about systems theory, and we would base our systems engineering on systems theory. But unfortunately, the way our educational system is set up, we don't know much about systems theory. We just use the word systems for whatever we happen to be working on. And so it would be nice if we knew more about systems theory as the basis, as a foundation for our systems engineering work. But the problem is, since we call everything a system, then the word system like totally loses its meaning, right? And so the whole question is, what are the other things that are at the same level of system conceptually that we can compare systems to give the term system meaning again? And so I call those things schemas. And I say that there's a whole set of these things called schemas at the same kind of ontological level as the system schema. And so the question is, what are the other schemas and what's their relationship to each other? And it turns out that seems no one's ever studied this before. So I can talk about this a little bit. It's just that Einstein noted that it's an amazing thing about the world that we come up with theories and then we look at phenomena and we use mathematics to connect theories that are basically logos or in language, and the physos, the physics, we connect these two through order. And so order is something which is neither in the, order is something in nature, but it's also something in the mind. And order is this non-dual that is behind our dualistic way of looking at things in terms of physos and logos. So this is the basic thing that I'd like to kind of like get across to you in this talk, which is that we have this fundamental split, dualistic split in our culture during the metaphysical era. Now, it's not always been this way. Before the metaphysical era, there was the mythopoetic era, and in that era, we had different dualities that we were dealing with. But in this era, the basic duality is physos and logos, and below that, there's another deeper duality of finite and infinite, and the finite turns out to have these two fundamental manifestations of physos and logos. And, from the physos side, these are using the Greek terms because they're much broader in their scope of their definition. But from the physos, we get physics, right? From the logos, we get language. But logos always also means reason, too. So then the question becomes, if you've got this basic fundamental split between physos and logos, at a philosophical level, then what is the physos of the logos and what is the logos of the physos, right? So the physos of the logos is easy for us to understand, right? Because that's the internal constraints of language itself. That's the thing that if you violate, you're talking nonsense. So that logic is the physos of the logos. But in our culture, we don't look at what's the opposite of that, right? What is the logos of the physos, right? And I'm proposing that the logos of the physos is this thing of that I'm calling a schema. And a schema is a thing that we are projecting on nature, that when we project on it on nature, we find anomalies, and then through this the analyzing of the anomalies, nature speaks back to us, and we find out what's really out there, not just our projections. So the schemas are the projections that come before, and then by seeing that the schemas don't really work exactly, we line up all of those things that don't quite work, those anomalies, and then nature can talk back to us, and we can find out more than just our projections. And then the non-dual between these two, the kind of like deeper layer that's underlying the... Because logic has its order, and nature has its order, right? So the deeper thing, the non-dual, is the order, and what we get out of there is mathesis, right? So we construct all these mathematical categories. So it's interesting that in our culture, we're great on mathesis, right? In the last century, the number of new mathematical things discovered is just like amazing, right? And we're pretty good on logic. Right? Also in the last century, we've discovered all different kinds of logic, not just the traditional Aristotelian logic, but there's all different kinds of logics that have been proposed, three-value logics and all kinds of things. What we don't have is a theory of schemas, right? And so I'm suggesting that when we talk about a system, we're talking about one particular schema, but then there's others. And the question is, what are the others, and what are their relations to each other? And through that, we'll learn to what a system really is, and it'll have meaning for us again. So, like I was saying, the mathesis is strong, the logic is strong, but the schemas are weak for us. Okay. Now, what are the things that are the interrelations between these? Okay. So, between the logic and mathesis, the place where the two things were strong on, there's something called mathematical model theory. And mathematical model theory is this really interesting combination of math and logic, where what the mathematicians did is they said, well, we don't understand what semantics are. No one understands what semantics are. So what we'll do is we'll make an assumption. We'll assume that it's exactly the same as semantics. I mean syntax. We'll assume that it's exactly the same as syntax, but give it other names. And so once they make that basic assumption that semantics is syntax by another name, then they can start talking about it mathematically. What are the relationships between the semantic constructs and the syntactic constructs as ways of expressing what a certain mathematical category is about? So it's all about what are all the things we can say about a mathematical category from a logical point of view, but then turning that back around and saying, what's the mathematics of these things? So that's what mathematical model theory is, and that's, you know, a fairly recent development, but is pretty well defined what mathematical model theory is. So, but as we're going out here toward the schema, what are the relationships of these things that we know well to the schema? And I'd suggest that the relationship between logics and schemas, the logic and the schema, is through the philosophical categories. And then when you start looking at that, you really have a series of levels here where you start with the facts, and then theories, and then paradigms, and epistemes. And then when you get to the ontos level, the ontology level, that's where you get the philosophical categories. Philosophical categories are the basic concepts that the most basic concepts we use, like causality, like space and time, like what's another one? Part and whole, those kinds of things. Okay, and then the relationship between mathematical categories and schemas is something called representation theory. And representation theory has to do with you've got a mathematical category, but then you can have all, let's say it's a group, you can have all kinds of ways that that group manifests in things. And so those are all the representations of those things. And the things that embody those representations are the schemas. Okay, so now you come to how does the projection work? Okay, so the idea is that if we start off with experience, then there's a certain facticity here, and we reason about it, right? And then at the highest level of reasoning, we talk about the ontology. Now, ontology has actually become a kind of buzzword. And what's normally meant by ontology is what Bunge calls the furniture of the world, right? And so this furniture of the world, people going around cataloging all that furniture of the world, and there's different ways of cataloging that furniture of the world. And so there's different levels of ontology. But the basic thing is that reason runs into paradoxes, and the ultimate paradox is being, right? In Indo-European languages, we have this term being. We say, it is a box, or we use the word is. And so philosophers have been arguing for centuries about what does it mean when you say something is something. And so it's kind of like the ultimate level of paradox because no one really knows what being is. There's so many theories about it that you just become lost in paradox. But what that does is it develops something called contradictions, right? Out of logic comes contradictions. And there's a thing called type theory that Russell developed, Bertrand Russell and Whitehead. And logical type theory is a way of stamping out all of the paradoxes, right? So he came up with a rule, a class cannot be a member of itself. And it's his way of stamping out paradoxes. And so then that allows us to have logic, right? Which is a functional logic that we know how not to fall into paradox when we use this logic. And then the logic gives you the schemas, right, which are then projected on the things, and then you get anomalies. And then the anomalies are something we experience, and we go around this in this circulation. So notice that when we go through this circulation, the circulation is we're going back and forth between the physos and the logos, but the important thing is that this area of the logos of the physos and the physos of the logos are interacting. In other words, we're projecting on the world. The world is not working exactly the way we think it's going to work, and we learn something from that, and then we project the next thing, and so forth. So one of the schemas that we project is a system, right? We see a system out there in the world, and then there are other things like that. So I want to distinguish between two things, ontic and ontological. This is ontic levels of emergence. In other words, from Gaia to strings, there's all of these levels out there, and lots of people have different ideas of what these levels are. But the basic idea is that there's a pressure of reductionism, and whatever stands from that pressure, you know, against that pressure of reductionism, we consider that an emergent level. But then different scholars have different ideas of what those emergent levels are. Okay, so these are the ontic levels that are discovered by science, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the opposite of that, which are the schemas. And so what I did was, you know, just basically from reading the literature in science and different disciplines over quite a number of years, I came up with this idea that these are the schematic levels. Now, this is a hypothesis. I'm not saying these are the real ones. I'm saying this is something we should look at and see what are the real schemas. So we start off with something called facets, then monads, then patterns, form, system. There's one that's a gray area, which I call a metasystem. Then there's the domain, the world, the cosmos, and the pluriverse. Now, the interesting thing about this is that below this level, below the pattern, we don't experience those. And above the world, we don't experience those. Those are pure projections. So we really experience from the world down to the pattern. And then there's another interesting thing, is that we have a blind spot in our culture with regard to metasystems, such that we don't really have a word for it in our culture. But we had a presentation earlier today about metasystems, and what he meant and what I mean are the same thing. So if you, that's the only other presentation I've ever heard about metasystems, and I was just so eager to find out whether he meant the same thing by it as me. But anyway, I think he does mean the same thing. Now it turns out that there is a word for metasystems, and that's the word scape. So there's no, for all these other things, there's just a word by itself that means that level. But for metasystems, we use the word scape. So we say landscape, we say seascape, we say mindscape. This word scape, if you look into the etymology of that word, you'll find that that's really what a metasystem is. And what that is that you stick a pole into the ground, and the scape is everything you can see from that axis, right? So it's everything you can see if you don't move. That's a scape, right? And so, see, at this level, the next level up from a system, you're looking at the environment from where you are. But when you get to the domain level, you're allowing people to move around, so I can come and be where you are and see what it looks like up here, and we can change places. And once you can change places, you've popped up to this domain level. Okay, now this is my most important result so far, and so this is the key idea of the talk, and that is that I've discovered that there's a relationship between geometrical dimensions and schemas. And the relationship is that there are two dimensions per schema and two schemas per dimension. So think of it this way. When we encounter things in the world, we try to figure out what is their dimension in space-time. That's the first thing we try to figure out what it is. So is it something flat, two-dimensional? Is it three-dimensional? Is it four-dimensional? And so forth. But that doesn't say anything about the organization of the thing. right? It just says what is the space-time envelope that that thing is fitting into. What schemas talk about is the organization. What schemas do is project an emergent level of organization on a space-time envelope. And so this relationship of two dimensions per schema and two schemas per dimension is the relationship between the space-time envelopes and our projection of order on those space-time envelopes. And so what's good about this is it allows you to go back and forth between these two very different concepts of the dimensionality and the organization, because every schema has a different organization. Okay, so now, basically what I'm going to do, and I don't know how much time I'm going to have to do it, is I'm going to go around that triangle and tell you what all the open problems are. Because once you've conceptualized the field this way, then you can talk about the things we don't know. So like, for instance, the philosophical categories, we don't have a very clear definition of the philosophical categories. Kant proposed some, Aristotle proposed some. There's a guy named Ingvar Johannesson who has proposed one recently. Not many philosophers have proposed them, and they're not very well worked out. So that's an area where we don't have a very good knowledge of what the philosophical categories are. But so if we go around to the logic, one of the things we've done is we've recognized that there's differences between normal and deviant logics, and there's a whole study of those. Some of the logics I like are the diamond logic and August Stern's matrix logic, which are very interesting. And I've developed something I call Vajra logic. So normal versus deviant logic, that's an area that's being researched actively. But something that's been missed is the difference between sets and masses. We live in a set culture, right? A set civilization, but we don't. There are other civilizations like in India and China, they're mass-based. So they have mass logics that they operate on rather than set logics. And this is a very interesting point for systems engineering, because when we design things in a set way. A set is something where it's like a bracket around different things. A mass is where you have a whole bunch of instances that are just alike, but they together have an emergent property. And so we design things as sets, and we use logic on that design, but then when we go to run or execute that, we don't have any logic that talks about execution. So it turns out that masses and pervasion logic is a way to talk about execution. And if you have both logics and can move back and forth between them, you can talk about the relationship between design and execution. So this is one of the areas of my research, is the relation between set and mass logic. So, and the interesting thing is that a syllogism, this is like a representation of what a syllogism is about. This is a representation of a pervasion, what those logics are like. And what's interesting is that those are two extremes, right? Set and mass are two extremes. So there must be something in the non-dual space, which is between and before. And so I'm calling that a non-dual logic and trying to develop what is the nature of these non-dual logics. Okay, model theory. What's interesting about model theory is that a formal system has presence, truth, and identity. These are the basic pieces of a formal system. But they don't ever talk about reality, right? And it's so interesting that if you take model theory and you think about the reality as bringing the semantics, right, then you see that there's a complete structure there that you're operating with, and the reason that formal systems don't, formal methods don't work very well is they don't deal with reality very well. And so that's another area of my research. And when you start looking at truth, identity, reality, and presence, then there are fundamental properties that connect those. And you'll notice that the ones that connect the syntax ones are completeness, well-formedness, and consistency. Those are the main properties of a formal system. But when you add reality, you get validation, verification, and coherence. These are things that systems engineers deal with every day. They deal with reality. How can we make a system that works in reality? That's what systems engineers talk about all the time. But we don't have a logic that allows us to deal with that. So, you know, one of the areas that we have to do research in is to try to create these broader logics. Okay, this is about set and masses again. I'll skip that. Oh, representation versus repetition. What's interesting about that hierarchy of schemas is that you can move up it or you can move down it. Moving down it is moving from through representations. In other words, a representation is always a poorer abstraction from the thing that it's representing. Right, and so it's a reduction. Representations are always reductions. But the opposite way, it turns out that in our culture, we've talked mostly about representation. If you look at philosophy, there's a lot about representation. Schopenhauer wrote Will and Representation, or is that it? Or anyway, you know, I mean, his whole philosophy is about representation. Hegel's is all about representation, so forth. But we don't talk very much about repetition, which is the moving up through the emergent levels. So, but it turns out that Deleuze and Taussig have recently given theories of repetition versus representation. So here's a good example. You know, form can be 3D or form can be 2D. So as 2D, it's a picture or plans. Right, as 3D, it's a building or a model, right? So perspective is a representation of the building, right? But plans, to get a model, you have to take all of the 2D representations and repeat a bunch of 2D representations in order to approximate the 3D model, right? But then there's a mimesis between the 2D repetition and representation. And there's a mimesis between the building and the model. There's a mimesis between the picture and the plan. And you can see that in architecture. Architects, they'll show you the plans, but then they'll show you a picture of what the building should be like. But then eventually they build a model, right, to show you the model, and then they build the building. So in architecture, you can see how that works. Now, the question is, what is that as we move up the schemas? This fourfold quadrant, we don't know what that is. We haven't explored that. So basically what I'm doing is I'm just talking about these open problems. Another open problem is, what are the schemas? Is this set a good set? Or are there other schemas out there that I haven't run into yet? That's it. So I have these two websites, arconic.net and holonomic.net. Arconic.net is kind of my systems theory papers from the past, and holonomic.net is my PhD research. So I think I'm on time. What? Any questions? Mm-hmm. Okay. There is nothing in the world that distinguishes systems from metasystems. They're both projections. Okay, so that's the thing about that hierarchy, which is interesting, is that anything in the ontological hierarchy, say the cell, you can consider the cell as a pattern, you can consider the cell as a form, you can consider it as a system, you can consider it as a metasystem. But what's interesting is that I think that the person who introduced schemas into the Western tradition is Protagoras. He said man is the measure of all things. If you look at that hierarchy, what you see is that it's a measure in terms of what man can understand of things. And so we can do that measure at these different emergent levels, and we do that by projecting those different emergent levels onto the phenomena, those orders. And it turns out when you project those orders, if you look at a cell as a pattern, you're going to see different things than if you look at it as a form, and you're going to look at it as a system, you're going to see different. And what's interesting is that like the cell, like normally we first look at it as forms, and then some people start looking at it as patterns, and some people look at it as systems, right? And then people start kind of moving out from there, and there's a point at which a certain ontic phenomena, it loses meaning to not consider it at its proper level in the set of schemas. So within the whole set of schemas, there's some range for each phenomena. Like it doesn't do any good to consider cells as as the cosmos or the pluriverse, perhaps. You see what I mean? It's too disparate an organizational comparison. Whereas, you know, like the cosmos, you start talking about galaxies and stuff like that. That makes perfect sense to talk about at that level. So you see what I mean? The interesting thing is that the schemas are projections, but multiple projections on the same ontic level, and they give you different insights. So they can be called, what I call them, as templates of understanding. You're projecting a template of understanding, and then whatever the phenomena is deviates from that. And that science is all about understanding the deviations.
So it's really more about the observer.
Schemas is all about the observer. We are unconsciously projecting schemas all the time, and then we discover them out there in the world because we're projecting them, and then we discover the deviations, and then by discovering the anomalies and deviations, we see, hey, it's not organized like we thought it was, like we originally projected. And that's what science is. And in that difference, the phenomena is talking back to us. So that's why it's the logos of the physos. Okay, so I think my time's up. Oh, thank you very much.